This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There's a lot of now Islamophobia coming up. He mentioned the recent stabbing and killing of the young boy in Chicago, the Palestinian boy. But he also raised the broader issue of the anti-Semitism.
That was Professor David Monda with City University of New York talking about the message in U.S. President Joe Biden's speech last night. Details coming up also. Aid deliveries to Gaza have been postponed another day. And some analysts wonder if China can afford to continue funding projects for its Belt and Road Initiative. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Israel bombarded Gaza early today, hitting areas in the south where Palestinians had been told to seek safety, and it began evacuating an Israeli town in the north near the Lebanese border, the latest sign of a potential ground invasion of Gaza. Also today, dozens of trucks carrying aid into the besieged territory remain stalled in Egypt as road repairs are carried out at the Rafah Gate entrance point into Gaza. And in communities around the Middle East, protests are being held calling for an end to the fighting. Last night, U.S. President Joe Biden again pledged unwavering support for Israel's security while saying the world cannot ignore the humanity of innocent Palestinians in Gaza. Today, the White House said it was asking Congress for $14 billion in aid for Israel. Biden also said he will ask for $100 million in aid for residents of Gaza. VOA's Jan Boschat is standing by in East Jerusalem to brief us on the developments in the conflict zones. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Jan.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm here in East Jerusalem after a day of clashes in the West Bank, especially in Ramallah and in other towns and cities around the West Bank. It was a violent day today, as it is, and it's been the last days.
Earlier, I understand, yes, you were in the West Bank in the city of Ramallah, and you wrote things are calm, but that might change anytime soon. So talk to us about the tension that is currently gripping the West Bank and the surrounding area.
It did change. It did change a lot. The mosque in Ramallah was full of people, and after the prayers, hundreds of people took to the streets of Ramallah protesting against the violence in Gaza, but also against the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who is a well-known enemy of Hamas. After that, people went to the border with the Israeli territory, and there were a lot of clashes with the Israeli army. At that point that I was in Ramallah, at least six people were shot with live ammunition by the Israeli forces. So it was a violent day again.
Do you think the West Bank, Ramallah, will the violence escalate and penetrate into the West Bank?
That's the question now. A lot of people think when the ground invasion begins from Israel to Gaza, things could get out of control in the West Bank. The Palestinian Authority is trying to calm things down, but a lot of people there that I've talked today said, it's very possible that the West Bank will be engulfed in violence if the ground invasion really happened. So there's a lot of tension and a lot of fear that the violence could spread into the West Bank more than already now.
And the violence in Gaza has also sparked protests across the region, including in Arab countries allied with the U.S. Tell us a little if there is any protests going on in that part of the world.
On the last days, there were a lot of protests in almost every single capital in the Middle East and North Africa. People are really, really angry with what is going on in Gaza and putting pressure in its governments to try to do something to stop the attacks in Gaza. A lot of people do believe that if the war continues, there's a risk of destabilization in a lot of countries around here, like Jordan, Lebanon, and even Egypt. The situation stands in our region right now. Nobody knows exactly what could happen in the next days or weeks.
And humanitarian aid to Gaza. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is urging parties to allow aid trucks to enter Gaza as quickly as possible amid yet another delay Friday that appears to have postponed aid deliveries. At least one more day.
All the eyes are in the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. There was a lot of hopes that today that so much needed humanitarian aid would flow into Gaza, but it didn't happen. And so now people are expecting that it might happen tomorrow or after tomorrow. And the situation in Gaza is just getting worse and worse. The hospitals don't have fuel anymore to run the generators. There's lack of medicine, water, food. The situation is catastrophic in Gaza, the UN officials are saying right now.
And lastly, Jan, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, King Abdullah II of Jordan, and the foreign ministers from France and the UK are all expected to take part in an event hosted by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in Cairo tomorrow. Can you tell us a little more about that if you're aware of it?
Well, there's a lot of diplomatic efforts, especially from the Muslim countries and also the Arab countries here, to try to find a solution to stop the violence in Gaza. As I said, there's a lot of pressure on these countries. The people are very angry and frustrated. So I think tomorrow they will try again. They're trying to find a diplomatic solution, but it doesn't look like it will happen. Israel, it seems to be determined to make a ground invasion to Gaza and to keep the war going on until Hamas is completely destroyed. At least that's what they're saying right now.
VOA's Jan Bouchard in East Jerusalem. Stay safe. Thank you for your input.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening for all of you.
President Joe Biden last night said it is important that Israel and Ukraine succeed in their conflicts for the United States' national security. However, Biden faces significant challenges in securing the necessary funding. There's also been a decline in bipartisan support for Israel as progressive Democrats have become more vocal in opposing Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory and the allocation of humanitarian aid to Gaza. VOA's Pauline Deho interviewed David Monda, a City University of New York professor, for more insight.
He really used this opportunity to try and, number one, create a very balanced narrative around the need for Israel to defend itself on one hand, but also trying to empathize with the Palestinian suffering in Gaza. Try to tie it to a domestic context where there's a lot of now Islamophobia coming up with the, he mentioned the recent stabbing and killing of the young boy in Chicago, the Palestinian boy, but he also raised the broader issue of the anti-Semitism, right? The Jewish synagogues and Jewish people actually now feel threatened. But the second element I think that he raised that was really interesting was to try and tie the Israel-Hamas conflict to the Russia-Ukraine conflict and trying to show Israel and Ukraine as bastions for democracy and to make the case as to why the United States needs to be vigilant and active in the Middle East and also to support Ukraine against Russia.
How would you respond to people who are saying that he's trying to have it both ways? For example, he's cheering on Israel and saying that we are 100% behind you, despite the outcry from human rights activists, human rights agencies, the people of Palestine, people who are being bombarded.
We have to understand Biden has to continue with the foreign policy that has been laid there, not only by himself, but by Trump, who was there before him, by Obama, who was there before Trump, by Bush, who was there before Obama, and for a whole tradition of American presidents going back to Harry Truman, right, with the creation of Israel in 1948. America has generally had a very pro-Israeli foreign policy in the Middle East. It's very difficult for Biden to steer away from that. But I think his challenge has also been that within the Democratic coalition of the party, there are a lot of pro-Palestinian or sympathetic Palestinian elements within the Democratic Party have been speaking out.
Let's talk about the current state of affairs, the humanitarian crisis in that region. Close to 3 million people. They have no place to go. No Arab country wants to open their borders. They are being bombed from the sky. They have no place to hide. Gaza is not a safe place. The United States has brokered a deal where they're going to allow in 20 trucks from Egypt to go to Gaza. Is that enough?
I do not think that is enough. And if I may, the challenge you have with Gaza is you have Hamas inside Gaza with the people, with these 2 million people. It's very difficult to differentiate a Gaza youth from a Hamas militant. President Biden and President al-Sisi were talking about opening a humanitarian corridor. But even then, Egypt has itself said these people cannot get into Egypt because Egypt does not want to have to deal with refugees once this conflict is over, because Egypt itself can't even take care of its own people adequately. The bombing and the military offensive which is going to happen is actually going to make things worse. And it's going to radicalize the Palestinians even more. But more broadly, it's going to probably lead to a regional war where countries like Iran, other Muslim countries, which were thinking of reestablishing links with Israel, will put that on hold.
David Monda, professor at the City University of New York, spoke to VOA's Paul Indiho. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is urging parties to allow aid trucks to enter Gaza as quickly as possible amid yet another delay Friday that appears to have postponed aid deliveries at least one more day. Meanwhile, protests in many Arab capitals took place Friday to denounce Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip and the delay in delivering aid to civilians. Edward Duranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab media showed video of Egyptian bulldozers working Friday to repair the road surface damaged by Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza side of the Rafah border crossing. It was not clear when the repairs would be completed, but an agreement to allow 20 aid trucks to enter Gaza Friday between U.S. President Joe Biden and Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi appears to be on hold for at least another day. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who traveled to Rafah to observe the latest developments, told a crowd gathered along the border that the aid trucks should be allowed to enter Gaza quickly.
We are witnessing a paradox. Behind these walls, we have 2 million people that is suffering enormously, that has no water, no food, no medicine, no fuel, that is under fire, that needs everything to survive. On this side, we have seen so many trucks loaded with water, with fuel, with medicines, with food, exactly the same things that are needed on this side of the wall.
A small crowd of Egyptian aid workers and members of non-governmental organizations waiting for permission to enter Gaza protested the ongoing closure of the border crossing. Supplies of aid from Egypt and other international donors remain piled up at Egypt's El Arish airport, awaiting a green light to go to Gaza. Several hundred protesters chanted slogans in favor of Gaza and Palestinians alongside Friday prayers at Cairo's Al-Azhar Mosque. Arab media also showed protests at Friday prayers in Beirut, Damascus, Amman, Baghdad, and Algiers. Demonstrators carrying Palestinian flags later marched through Cairo's iconic Tahrir Square after Friday prayers, chanting slogans in support of Gaza and the Palestinians. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman speaking Friday at a joint meeting of the Gulf Cooperation Council and ASEAN in the Saudi capital Riyadh urged both sides in the Gaza conflict to stop targeting civilians amid reports of further civilian casualties Friday, including families that were taking refuge at a Gaza church. He says that he opposes categorically the targeting of civilians in any way or under any pretext, and the importance of following international humanitarian law, as well as the cessation of attacks on infrastructure that civilians depend on for their daily existence. Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdullahian told journalists after attending a conference of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in Jeddah that the entire Middle East is a powder keg waiting to explode, and he blasted foreign states and leaders who he claims remain silent as civilians are targeted by Israeli attacks. Algeria's Justice Minister Abdelrachid Tibbi told journalists that his country is following the serious developments in the Palestinian territories as a result of the dramatic attacks on Gaza that have resulted in the deaths of hundreds and the wounding of many others. Egypt is preparing to hold a conference of Arab and international states Saturday to discuss implementing a ceasefire in Gaza and the need to find a long-term solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Chinese President Xi Jinping this week lauded the Belt and Road Initiative, or BRI, his 10-year-old plan of building global infrastructure and energy networks that connect Asia with Africa and Europe. Former U.S. Ambassador and distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council, Peter Pham, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme China faces some challenges with the program.
The Belt and Road Initiative was announced 10 years ago. It's celebrating its 10th anniversary, and what started as a set of physical direct transportation links to link China to markets in Europe has evolved impressively, one has to acknowledge, to being a transport network that has ambitions to connect not just China and Europe, but also China, the Middle East, China and South Asia, and increasingly China and Africa as well. But I think there's a real question that people have to ask is this really going forward, or are the headwinds that the Chinese economy has witnessed in the last year put a dent into this? And I think there's evidence that this might be the swan song, actually, of this entire thing, not just because of the geopolitics, but increasingly because of the economics.
By increasingly because of the economics, you mean because of the billions of dollars that China is putting out in these infrastructure projects or something else?
Because of the financial crisis at home. China has got because of the collapse of several of the large property developers in China itself, which has made the mortgage crisis of 15 years ago in the U.S. look like nothing by comparison. The amounts, the defaults of the largest builders in China. We're seeing evidence of, if you will, a tightening of the belt, no puns intended, around the Belt Road Initiative. For the first time ever, following the coup in Niger at the end of July, a Chinese parastatal invoked a unconstitutional change of government to stop construction on a billion-dollar dam at Kandaji in Niger. That's never happened before. The much-celebrated light rail system in Addis Ababa that was supposed to be transformative, it's running at barely a third of its capacity for want of spare parts.
As you probably know, at the end of the two-day summit on Wednesday, there was a $97.2 billion worth of cooperation projects that were, in fact, signed. Representatives from over 30 countries were there. What do you make of that?
Well, big announcements. Let's see what comes out of them. You know, there's been some interesting work done by a number of economists and others about the value of some of these propositions. In one African country I'm aware of, there was a study done of a telecommunications deal that was touted at the time to be worth $1 billion. And certainly the loan that was on file is for $1 billion. But even at the list price, mind you, not the value price, but the list price, the equipment that was actually delivered and installed was worth a tenth of that. Talk about a debt trap and talk about abuse of financing. That's just one example. You know, I take the number. It's an impressive number. One shouldn't dismiss it entirely. There's some substance there. There can't be smoke without fire. But whether it's worth $97 billion, time will tell.
Distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council, Peter Pham, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Kelly Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
People are experiencing extreme hunger, with 49 million on the brink of famine. There is little doubt that food security depends on fertile soils and crops adapted to climate change. It's why the United States, the African Union, and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization launched the Vision for Adapted Crops and Soils, or VACS. VACS aims to foster more resilient food systems by developing climate-resilient, nutritious crop varieties and building healthy, fertile soils, said Dr. Carrie Fowler, the State Department's Special Envoy for Global Food Security. Initially, we're focusing back on Africa. It's the region with the greatest need and the greatest potential. On the crop side of the program, VACS is implementing a three-step program.
Over-reliance on a few staples is risky, and in the best of years, it can't provide an adequate diet or balanced nutrition for everyone. The good news is that Africa is rich with nutritious traditional and indigenous crops.
Expanding the spotlight and investments in these crops can unlock the potential to provide better nutrition, rebuild soils, support local communities and their cultures, and strengthen resilience, said Dr. Fowler.
The first step was to look at all those traditional and indigenous crops in Africa and ask which of those crops have the most potential for providing more nutrition. We narrowed the list down from 300 to 60. The next step is going to be to look at those 60 crops and ask, how are they going to do in a climate-changed world? On the basis of knowing which crops have the most nutritional value and most potential to provide good production in Africa, we can make informed decisions on crop breeding and other efforts.
The third step, said Dr. Fowler, is to establish the mechanisms needed to support that kind of work in a sustainable and in a fundamental way.
This doesn't mean that the United States or any of us involved are abandoning our work on major crops. It simply means that we're adding to this and taking advantage of the really tremendous benefits that some of these traditional and indigenous crops offer.
The program, said Dr. Fowler, is not going to solve all problems. No program could. But it does address two fundamental prerequisites for food security, having good soils and having good crops.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.